You are Locked On Twins, your daily Minnesota Twins podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And welcome to the Locked On Minnesota Twins podcast. Today is Monday, February 22nd. I'm your gracious host, Nash Walker. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code Locked On. You'll get 20% off your next order. Nick Nelson, Twins Daily, Williams Astudillo, Stan. Believe it or not, Nick, last time you came on was like a day or two after the Twins traded for Kenta Maeda and the Mookie Betts deal went down. And we kind of broke that down a little bit before we knew a whole lot about Kenta and what he brought to the table. A year later now, among other changes around the world and in baseball, Maeda is the Twins' number one ace. I've talked to you a little bit in the last year, but not on the record. How have things been going for you?
Good, man. I can't believe that was only a year ago. That feels like it was about a decade ago now.
I know. February 6, 2020. It feels like forever ago for sure. But I do want to ask you about your latest article, because one of the criticisms here with the Twins is that they don't have that frontline starter, right? That's what the criticism's been. That's kind of been the go-to. And I know you addressed this a little bit, but you looked into how they strove to clean up those playoff mishaps this offseason to address those directly, because it's almost like that argument that they don't have a playoff caliber rotation, it kind of got broken down last year with Maeda pitching as well as he did and Barrios and how well they pitched in the playoffs together. So what did you find in your article for the Twins and how they're looking to address those mishaps of the last, 15 years?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's kind of wild, right? I mean, I get the ace in the playoffs storyline and narrative. It makes sense. I mean, we've seen guys like Madison Bumgarner and other pitchers step up and carry their team through the playoffs. But yeah, I mean, I just don't know how anyone can look at what happened last year and say, well, if only the Twins had an ace. No pitcher was going to get them through those games against Houston when they didn't hit at all and had some fielding miscues and had some bullpen meltdowns. So I was looking at the Twins offseason moves sort of through the scope of slaying that dragon and overcoming that one thing, which really I know a lot of fans is all that matters. I mean, it's still, they got some work to do to win the division, I think. And they're going to have it cut out for them because the White Sox are pretty good, as I think we'll discuss here. But, I looked at the fact that, especially in the last couple of years, the teams that this front office built that played 600 ball in the regular season and then got swept out of the playoffs, there's only a certain extent you can put that on the front office's shoulders, right? I mean, they've built teams that are capable of winning. I don't know that there's any hugely magical formula to winning in the playoffs, but where the Twins have come up short is infield defense. You know, a couple of things that really come to my mind when I think about the setbacks in those series against the Yankees and Astros were CJ Cron missing a sort of a wayward double play relay in 2019 from Luis Arraez that sort of opened the floodgates against New York. And then, of course, we all remember Jorge Polanco's short arm throw to second base towards Arraez that was not corralled. So I think, obviously they brought in Andrelton Simmons to play shorts. That hugely upgrades their defense at short and reduces the likelihood that you're going to have Polanco causing any issues like that. And moving Polanco to second, I think, is an upgrade there over Arraez. He's going to be more capable of probably turning a stronger double play throw than Arraez did in 2019 and maybe reaching out and getting a wayward throw, which Arraez was not able to do. Not to say he's a terrible defender, but just not super skilled. I think less skilled than Polanco. You look at Sergio Romo, a guy who's kind of melted down in the playoffs for them these last 2 years, just not quite the postseason bull that they were hoping to get when they traded for him. So they replaced him with Colomé, who's a better pitcher and I think more likely to succeed in that tandem closer role with Rodgers. And then just depth, just making sure that they're not starting, hopefully, Marwin Gonzalez or Jake Cave in a playoff game by bringing Arraez into that sort of 10th man role. And I think they're going to have some prospects that are now, Kirilloff, we saw step in out of nowhere in the playoffs. I think he'll be a little more seasoned. You might have Larnick. So I just think they're going to be more prepared to deal with injuries, a little stronger at the back end of the bullpen and sharper on defense, which were three of their kind of key downfalls in the playoffs the last couple of years.
We're getting the cart in front of the horse when we talk about October 2021, and you mentioned it's going to be difficult even to win the division this year. And with looks like five playoff teams, I think the Blue Jays are going to be good. Out West, I think there's going to be wins to be had with the Rangers out there being brutal and the Angels. I don't know what's going on with them, but let's look ahead to October. And if this is it, Nick, if it's Kenta Maeda, Jose Barrios, Michael Pineda, Matt Shoemaker, Jay Happ, Randy Dobnak. That's the rotation. How would you feel going into a playoff series and into October as a whole, trying to get through multiple series with that rotation?
I'd feel pretty good. You know, I mean, they don't have the standout ace necessarily that's going to be your horse pitching eight shutout innings. I mean, hopefully Barrios could take the step forward and be that, or Maeda could repeat what he was able to do last year, but I'm not necessarily holding out that hope. I mean, the plan last year was have a good rotation and an excellent offense and a very good bullpen. And I still think that's kind of the plan. I think, you know, all those guys, Jay Happ has a ton of playoff experience. He's been in the league for so long. I think he's a nice addition in that regard. Pineda is sort of an underrated factor, I think, in this rotation. The Twins have gone like 21-10 in his starts since he joined the team, and he's got like a mid-3 ERA. He's finally not going to be held back by any injury or suspension coming into this season, so looking for big things from him. But it is going to be interesting to see, you know, I mean, all these pitchers go kind of ramping back up to a full season's workload after the 60-game season. I know that's something the Twins are going to be very cognizant of. But the key thing to keep in mind, I think, as we look at the postseason rotation, is that they didn't trade any of their prospects this offseason, and they're going to be in position to add someone at the deadline if they see that need. And I think they will be willing to pull the trigger. I think that's kind of part of their strategy.
I agree. And you try to avoid to say, myself especially, like when I'm on the shows, like, it's always the trade deadline. I try to avoid saying that because people just kind of roll their eyes and say, why not do it now? But I agree. I think they might be saving a little payroll room, you know, by not maybe bringing back Jake or Rizzi to add some salary at the deadline. Or I think even looking into next offseason, I was going to say this, the free agent starting pitching class next offseason is really exciting. Noah Syndergaard, Marcus Stroman, you know, maybe even, I don't know if Bauer will be back on there. I don't think he's a Twins target, but it's going to be really special at the top, I think, of guys that the Twins are going to be interested in, and especially in Syndergaard and Stroman, who I like both of them a lot. So I think they do have that long-term view. Short-term view, April 8th is the home opener, Nick. Reports are that the Twins are looking to bring back 10,000 fans to start at Target Field. I think that's 25% capacity. How do you feel about going to games this summer, and are you excited to get back to Target Field?
I mean, we'll see. You know, it's a little ways away, so it's hard to say with things changing so much on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis. But right now, I feel pretty good about it. I love the fact that the Twins are partnering with a great, innovative local company in 3M to develop some solutions and come up with the safest possible experience. I was reading a little bit in the Star Tribune, Rochelle Olson's article this morning about some of the measures that they have planned and what they're trying to get through. And it's going to depend, obviously, on the governor and working with city officials, but it seems very plausible to me. I mean, speaking for me personally, you know, I'm 30, 35 years old, fairly healthy, thankfully. I've never been that scared of catching the virus myself personally. My biggest fear has been that I would catch it and spread it to someone who was at risk. And now we're getting to a point where those people are getting vaccinated. You know, my dad's getting his first vaccination shot on Wednesday. You know, so I think just that reality coming into play, feeling more comfortable that the people around me are going to be safe, would give me some confidence. So I think right now I lean towards, I'm looking to hopefully get some tickets to Target Field. Man, I miss it.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to get back. And I think this team specifically too will really benefit from having fans back there. I think the 2019 Bomb Squad just fed off people getting back in huge numbers to Target Field. I think that'll benefit them for sure. When we look at this roster, it sounds like Major League Baseball is not going to have that limit with 26-man roster to have 13 pitchers, 13 hitters. It sounds like you're going to be able to have 14 pitchers. So assuming that the Twins do that, I know you kind of think it's likely, as do I, that they'll have 14 pitchers, especially because there's not a lot of off days early in April as there usually is. That last roster spot, Nick, because if you look at the roster, you know, Polanco's backup, of course, Arise is a backup. Jeffers and Cave, we assume, if Arise is, and we'll talk about left field a little bit, in left field. But that last roster spot, Brent Rooker, Williams Astudillo, someone else, what do you see and what would you like to see from that spot?
I think Astudillo is the best fit as things currently stand, if everyone is healthy, knocking furiously on wood here. You know, I just think that he's a nice fit alongside Arias on the bench as sort of a two-headed monster in the backup infield role, because they give you a left-handed hitter and a right-handed hitter who are both very contact heavy guys who could come in and pinch hit or hold their own offensively for you, you know, much more than hold his own Arias has done. And I think they sort of complement each other well from a functionality standpoint. You know, Arias is going to be that second baseman, maybe a little short, maybe a little left field. I don't know how strong he's going to be at third base. He can play it. Astudillo's got a lot more experience at third, maybe a little more of a traditional third base skill set, and plays some catcher, which I like. I just think it gives you a little more confidence and comfort starting someone like Garver at DH or first base and not having to worry about, you know, if Jeffers got hurt, losing your DH or something like that. So as much as that was Ron Gardenhire's sort of, he loved to have the third catcher, I can see the value in it, especially considering that that 26 man's probably not going to play very often, maybe only get a handful of at bats a week. I would be concerned about putting Rooker or Blankenhorn or Nick Gordon, you know, a prospect who really is still not fully developed, into that role that might inhibit him. Whereas you don't have to worry about that with Astudillo.
BetOnline.ag is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, reality TV, real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. We got baseball coming up as well. You're going to want in on this action. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to our website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Again, go to betonline.ag. Use promo code LOCKEDON. This platform is very easy to navigate. It's very easy to go through, pick what you want, bet on it. You're not going to want to sit on the sidelines anymore. Again, that's betonline.ag. Use promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Built Bar now has a flash sale for the Coconut Puff Bar. It's a luscious chocolate, a soft marshmallow. It's made with premium collagen protein blend, 16 grams of protein, 130 calories, only 6 grams of sugar. It's gluten-free, it's preservative-free, and it's limited time only. Only a one-day sale at BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON at BuiltBar.com. Built Bars are delicious. Built Bars are healthy. I'm skeptical about protein bars. Anytime I try a protein bar, I don't expect it to taste good because a lot of them don't. Built Bars are legitimately delicious. They're covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew, and they're great for the health conscious guy like me. I'm a type 1 diabetic, so now anytime I think of having a protein bar or even a candy bar for that matter, I go to BuiltBar.com. I use promo code LOCKEDON and I order it straight from there. Plus right now with that flash sale for the delicious Coconut Puff Bar, you're going to want in on this action, and you're going to want in on Built Bars. They really are delicious. They really are healthy. Take advantage of this one-day sale. Order now at BuiltBar.com and use that promo code LOCKEDON.
Yeah, and I think it's worth mentioning, too, especially with last year. It just there was like kind of a somber feeling without fans there, and I think the 60-game season and opt-outs, I think it was – we know it was very odd, but I think there was like a need for some energy. And Astudillo, I mean – he brings that to the clubhouse. He brings that to the bench. I mean, he's got that, and everyone loves him, and he's just a lovable character. And I think that might have faded over the last year among fans, just seeing he was a little bit limited at the plate after a really hot start in 2019. But when we look at left field, Nick, I think when you guys were talking about this, I came to the conclusion as well as you guys. And if you haven't, go watch that Twins Daily Offseason Live with Seth and John and Nick. Very, very good. I think we all assume it's going to be Luis Arraez in left field, or at least a large portion of the fan base believes it's going to be Luis Arraez in left field, especially with his comments the other day that he's working to get better in left field. But do you see him in left, Nick, yourself? And do you see Luis Arraez leading off for the Twins on opening day?
I do. I think I would say yes to both of those things. You know, Arraez played, I believe, zero left field in the minors, and he came up and started 18 games there as a rookie, and to my eyes looked pretty decent, like shockingly good out there. I mean, he wasn't amazing, but he wasn't a huge liability out there. You know, and I think he's going to be this spring, he'll be more focused on it and more sort of purposeful about learning the position and sharpening his skills there. And yeah, they want his bat in the lineup. I mean, it just seems weird to think about an opening day lineup that doesn't have Luis Arraez in it. He is that type of spark plug you want in the leadoff spot. And I think with, you know, Max Kepler has certainly been the staple in that top of the order role for the last couple of years. But, you know, with Eddie Rosario moving on, the cleanup spot's open. And to me, that looks like a great fit for Kepler, a left-handed hitter who had 36 home runs in 2019. And, you know, I think profiles a little more as a middle of the order bat, even though he was a nice fit in the leadoff spot for a while. But that's just kind of tailor-made for Arias to be just driving pitchers crazy right out of the gates with those at-bats, right?
Oh, yeah, especially when you have a guy, I think he's got a 390 on-base percentage the last 2 years. And then you have Donaldson, who's known for getting on-base and walking 100 times a year. And you have Cruz third. It's like, I feel like that's a really nice order to have. Two really high on-base guys, one and two, and then you have Cruz and bringing Kepler into that cleanup role. And I agree with Kepler's profile has tended to shift into lower average, higher power, right? And that's just the truth of it. I don't think we all expected that to happen, but that's just how it's gone for him with the batting average of balls in play being so low. I have mixed feelings when we look at the back of the rotation and maybe the bullpen as well with Lewis Thorpe. I think I've soured a little bit in the last year and a half just hearing about how much upside he has. I know it's exciting, but personally, I feel like this is it for Lewis Thorpe this spring, to be honest with you, and early with the Saints, I think, if he starts there. Nick, how do you feel about Lewis Thorpe heading into 2021? Do you see his role expanding at all with the Twins, or what's your sense on that?
Yeah, he's definitely one of the players I'm most excited to get a look at. You know, I mean, last year was a disaster. There's no question about it. Seems like there was definitely some friction with him and the team in spring training. He got sent out early. I believe he went back home to Australia for a couple of weeks to take a little bit of a mental health break. Did get an opportunity with the team due to injuries and did not really make the most of it. So I think it's just one of those situations where these guys, and it's kind of similar with Nick Gordon too, who had such a tough year last year with everything going on. Everything they've been working for, their whole careers are sort of on the line, and they're seeing the fleeting possibility of it slipping away from them. So I'm curious to see how guys like that are going to come back with maybe a head full of steam and a chip on their shoulder this year, because Lewis Thorpe is a good pitcher. I mean, they really, really liked him heading into last spring. I know he's got swing and miss stuff from the left side, has been a top prospect, still pretty young. So I'm glad he has an option left. As we learned recently, he's going to have a fourth option. So the Twins will have the ability to send him down to AAA. I would imagine they will give him a chance to sort of get some momentum, get some guys out, you know, find himself after a tough year and a short year. But I think there's potential there, and I'm really curious to see how the relationship between him and the Twins sort of plays out this year.
And that last option is huge to find that, especially considering like they're either going to cut him or put him on the opening day roster. Now he can start probably in the Saints rotation. But since Thorpe is probably not going to be on the opening day roster, we know there's a last bullpen spot to be had, maybe two if it's 14 pitchers. Who do you lean with, Nick? Sean Anderson, Ian Hamilton, Anwar Colina, Dobnak in a long relief role, Smeltzer, Thorpe. Who do you lean to for that last bullpen spot or maybe the last two?
I think Dobnak's going to be in there as long as he's not in the rotation because, you know, as we mentioned, they're going to want to be taking it very easy on these starters. In fact, lately I've had the idea floating through my head of what if they were to go with a six-man rotation just to try to really ease these guys' workloads in the early going. But short of that, you know, I think we'll see a lot of five-inning starts, you know, guys pulled as they get close to 100 pitches, even if it's earlier than that. So they're going to need at least one guy like Dobnak who is conditioned to come in and pitch multiple innings, has a nice loose flexible arm. Smeltzer's been very good in that role too, so I could certainly see him doing something similar. You got guys like Bailey Ober, who's now on the 40-man roster, who's got a starter's, you know, endurance and stamina. As for the last spot, which I think we both think there's probably gonna be a 14th spot in that bullpen, I would lean towards Sean Anderson just kind of as my default pick, but I almost feel like it's immaterial who has that job coming out of spring training, because I'm fairly confident they will use it as a bit of a rotating door for guys with options so that they can continually bring in fresh arms from St. Paul and kind of extend that to almost being like a 15-man bullpen.
Or especially that they're in St. Paul now.
Yeah, it's just so easy.
Yeah, it's just going to be so easy for them to do. I mean, they did it a ton when they were in Rochester in 2019. I can't even imagine how much it's going to happen. Especially, as you said, I think it's important to say guys like Ober who are stretched out, you know, maybe even Josh Winder, who hasn't pitched above low A, but still guys like that, I think for long relief, like we saw with Smeltzer and Thorpe and Dobnak in 2019, I think are going to be valuable for the Twins. It's interesting you mentioned that six-man rotation. I think they're going to be really, really tight early on with how much these guys throw and how often they throw. I think that's definitely a good observation there. let's talk about the season. You mentioned people are looking ahead and just saying, when's this team going to win a playoff game? But we also said it's going to be a challenge in the Central. And if it's only five AL playoff teams, it's going to be really important to win the Central this year to get into that ALDS and avoid the wild card game. And right now, a lot of betting sites, for what's that worth, whatever that's worth, have the White Sox both winning more games projected and winning the Central in 2021. Look at DraftKings last week. White Sox 91.5 wins is the over-under. Twins at 88.5. Cleveland at 81.5. What's your initial reaction to that, Nick?
I'm shocked. I mean, I get that, you know, the White Sox play in a larger market and people get excited about a young swell of talent that's coming up and showed some things last year, and they've brought in a big name manager and Tony La Russa. But yeah, I was looking at some of those betting odds last week too. And I mean, the White Sox are far and away the second favorite behind the Yankees in the American League. And I just don't get it. I mean, you know, it's common for some of these teams to have a bit of a sophomore slump. So I don't know if some of these players that really helped carry the White Sox last year are going to be able to do that again over a full season now that the league has seen them a little bit, which is not a knock. I mean, I think the White Sox are extremely talented and they're going to be a tough opponent, but you know, it seems pretty sudden to have them all of a sudden as the clear favorites over a Twins team that has won the division two straight years, very strong at every position on paper. You know, you look at projection sites like Fangraphs and they're pretty clearly favored. So, I think it's just sort of the shiny new object thing that's driving some of these betting markets. And maybe they're not accounting enough for some of the Twins' pretty key advantages when it comes to depth. I mean, they're just much, much more equipped to handle the injuries that are inevitable to come, I think, and maybe to handle some regression that the White Sox are likely to face.
I agree. I think you look at the Twins and people, I think, see the Twins in the last 2 years and got excited about the Twins, maybe even outside of the market, and then see them just fall in the playoffs again. You have this playoff streak looming over them. I think some people want to see a change, and you mentioned the big market in the Central, and I think Vegas probably sees it as an opportunity as well, knowing that, to get some money on the White Sox this year. But I agree. I mean, I think if this was flipped, if you had the White Sox doing what the Twins just did for 2 years and the Twins with a bunch of young talent, I think you'd see the odds flipped. I think it does have a lot to do with the market. I think it does have a lot to do with the excitement around that young talent in the market and them being bad for so long. But looking at the 2021 Twins, Nick, I want to hear your team MVP prediction, your team Cy Young prediction, and then let's predict who's going to win the Central.
All right. Well, let's see. Team MVP. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and go out, not really on a limb, but kind of diverge from maybe my normal narratives. And I'm going to say it's going to be your guy, Josh Donaldson.
Hey,
I think he's going to give, let's have a big bounce back year.
Keep him healthy. That.
Cause that's another thing, you know, that I think is getting overlooked. When we talked this time last year, the Twins had a lot of buzz and excitement behind them because they had just signed Donaldson to this $100 million contract and sort of added him as this elite piece on top of an elite team. And I feel like people just, like, these betting markets just forgot about Josh Donaldson. Like, the Twins still have this stud that they added that we didn't really get to see very much of his impact at all last year. If he can stay healthy at all in that number two spot wedged between, say, Arias and Cruz, he's just going to have an opportunity to put up a ton of numbers and be a huge factor. So, you know, I would lean towards Buxton if he was going to stay healthy all year, but I've given up hope. I don't know. It's just so hard to believe he's going to be able to stay healthy enough to win a team MVP designation. Cy Young, it's hard to go away from Maeda. I know people are expecting a little regression, rightfully so, but, you know, you look at the secondary numbers, this guy's he's just nasty. He's just dominant. I mean, he had a higher whiff rate than Shane Bieber last year. And the Twins made some changes, I think, that are very legitimate and sustainable. So I'm going to stick with Maeda, although I do think, as I mentioned, Pineda is going to be a big factor. And I think Berríos, you know, he sees that free agency looming. He was talking the other day to reporters about wanting to take that step forward and be an ace. So I'm pretty excited about all three of those guys. And any of the three really could emerge as the number one type in this rotation. And then who's going to win the Central? I'm sticking with the Twins. I mean, as I mentioned, I just think the depth advantage is pretty key. You know, these teams are all going to have injuries and probably some unforeseen things here as they try to get back into the 162 game regimen. And the Twins, as usual, just like last year, are really, really well built for that marathon, I think.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that about Donaldson too, and the health generally, because I think you put it in a perfect way that I probably can't emulate as well. Is it seems like people, even Twins fans, like, I'll read comments or my buddies will be like, I forgot Donaldson exists. It's like, I get it because he was hurt.
Right.
we also, like you said, I mean, that was their big addition last year. They were expecting Donaldson to help them get over that hump, and it's very important for him to stay healthy to the success of this team. I think in the upside of the team, I think they'd be good as they were without him for a majority of 2020. But for the upside, Buxton and Donaldson, in my estimation, hold that upside, like unlocking that next level for the Twins in the postseason and just to winning a lot of games during the regular season. I think those two are super key, and I'm glad you mentioned them. Maeda, and the last thing I want to ask you, Nick, I thought this was interesting and maybe spoke to that upside that Twins fans are perhaps forgetting with Jose Berríos as well. He has the seventh best odds and tied with Corey Kluber to win the American League Cy Young Award. Maeda's 10th, which I thought was interesting. What do you predict for a season for Jose Berríos? Do you see him maintaining that number two status, or do you think there still is that hidden upside? Are you still buying into that in 2021?
I guess my expectation, you know, I do think he'll improve on last year. In fact, I think what we saw basically the second half, or even, you know, second two thirds of last season, was the Berríos that we know. You know, he's a pitcher that's very much built on routine and his regimen. So I could see him being a guy that was maybe a little more affected than some others by the disruption of shutting down spring training, taking a couple months off, coming back. So I think now that he's had a chance to go through a regular offseason and build up as normal, he'll hit the ground running. We've seen him have phenomenal opening day starts in two of the last 3 years. So until proven otherwise, it's just hard for me to believe he's going to turn that corner, because he seems like he is so he's just in his stride. I mean, he is what he is. He's a mid three ERA guy who's going to give you some gems, have a few down moments. And, you know, he's had those sort of, I guess, if I don't know if it's fatigue or whatever it is that kind of hits him in the later part of the year, the past few seasons. And, you know, now he's going back to the 200 inning kind of projection after throwing 65 innings or whatever last year. So it's going to be hard to avoid that. But of course, every pitcher is going to be dealing with their sort of workload adjustments and stuff this year. So I think Berríos will be the guy that we know and love, but I don't know. I want to believe that there's still another level to be found, but we'll have to see it to believe it, I guess.
Nick, knowing what you know about the farm system and who's coming and Maeda being here for the next 3 years, if you're the Twins, would you extend Jose Berríos on a lucrative deal? I know that comes down to numbers a lot and how long that deal is, but just generally speaking, is that something that you would be heavily in favor of, you know, sort of in favor of, maybe in disfavor of? How do you view a potential extension for Berríos?
I'd be very in favor of that. I mean, there's not many guys that are safer to take that chance on. He's going to be still young. I mean, he's on track to hit free agency at like what, age 28, mm-hmm. You know, cause he entered the league at such a young age. And he's just the one example finally of a pitcher that the Twins drafted, developed, and turned into a frontline starter. His durability track record is almost unmatched. I think it was maybe you, Nash, who posted a stat a while ago. There's like two pitchers over the last 5 years that have thrown a certain amount of innings with a ERA under a certain number. I'm sure you know the details of that better than me, but it really puts into perspective just how durable and effective he's been compared to all of his peers. You really don't get that combination. And I think that gets missed a little bit when people talk about, well, he's not reaching that ace level. You know, he's not quite getting over the hump to be better than a number one starter. It means a lot to be on the mound every fifth day and regularly being able to throw that 100 pitches without, I mean, he's never really had any durability concerns.
To be that, to lock in a guy like that into the rotation for the next handful of years, I think is super valuable, like you said. And then that raises the floor and the ceiling of your rotation if Duran comes through and Maljavec and Maeda continues to be great. I agree with you. I would be in favor of it. Even if he isn't, you know, that ace or never really unlocks that, I think who he is right now is very valuable on an extension. I agree with you. Nick, thanks so much. I'm looking forward to the season. Hopefully we can get to Target Field at a certain point this summer and link up there and watch a game and, you know, sit out in the sun. It sounds so nice with the weather warming up, hopefully. And, you know, the how cold it was last week. It's fun to think about. That's always what comes with spring training. Thanks so much. And we'll have you on again soon.
Yeah. You got your 21st birthday coming up.
Yeah, in April. I know, in April. So I might have to get a $15 beer or something at the game this summer.
Hey, first one's on me, buddy.
Thanks, Nick.
All right. Take care, Nash. Thanks for having me on.